You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702. Open line.
Now, as you know, I am most active on Twitter in the morning. In the afternoons, I try and do other stuff. So waking up this morning and seeing Barry Bateman trending, who is my colleague here at Prime Media, and someone alerted me to this last night, and also hashtag POES, I can't utter that word, and as Aki just said, imagine trying to explain that trending word to someone who's not South African. Good luck in doing that, using euphemisms, and then Malema is still trending as well. And then a lot of people had sent me a video last night of Malema doing an ad hoc presser, or a part of, not even ad hoc, a press conference yesterday, where he had said a bunch of things, and at one stage it looked in the video as if Barry had asked a question of Julius Malema. Julius responded in a particular way, and then you can't quite hear what Barry is saying, but if you don't need to be able to read lips to be able to see that it looks as if he's swearing at Malema. And that raises a couple of questions that many of you have asked me on WhatsApp, for example. What is your company doing about it? What do you think about it, Eusebius? And in a context where there is often tension between journalists and politicians, I thought that it is important for us to go there. It's never easy, and it's always awkward by definition, to critique your own. Journalists also don't like, as I said to one of my colleagues this morning, to be part of the news. But you know what? Self-examination is important, number one. And number two, very often in the commercial media, we are very quick to lampoon, to critique, to dissect what happens at the SABC as a public broadcaster, but we're not as good at self-examining ourselves, right? And I think it's very important that the media learn to self-examine. That's really, really important. So to that end, I am grateful. I think it is the right thing to do, but nevertheless, I am grateful, A, because she's very busy, and B, because she understands the awkwardness as well of this, that Barry Bateman's line manager, Mashlatse, who is group editor-in-chief at Eyewitness News at EWN, is joining me now on the line for a couple of minutes. I'd asked Barry to come on. He had declined to come on. It's nothing I can do about that. And he was very short and crisp in his just saying to my producer in communication telephonically that he can't come on, whatever that might mean. But right now joining me on the line is Mashlatse. Mashlatse, good morning, and thank you so much at short notice for coming on and postponing other stuff that you need to do for a couple of minutes. I appreciate it.
No, good morning, and thank you very much, CBS. I agree with you in terms of, you know, it's always awkward, but I think holding each other accountable is also important, and the first prize is at least to have a conversation with our listeners so we can explain to them, because we owe it to them. They are also asking the question.
I think that's spot on. So when this surfaced, and I think one or two of our media colleagues maybe at other media houses went, wait, what? Does that look like what I think it is, even though I can't clearly hear the audio? Then very quickly, the clip obviously went viral. When it came to your attention, A, how did you react immediately? And then after your initial reaction, how did you then proceed from the point of view of being the editor-in-chief?
So the tweet was actually brought to my attention by the news editors who were on duty at the time, and all of them, of course, were concerned, and they found it very important to actually make sure that I actually see it. And the first reaction from my side was to basically take Barry Bateman off air. Remember, he had gone to cover this Julius Malema going to meet with the Hawks, and I found that it would have been in conflict to have the same person reporting on that particular story. And but we also still felt that the story was important to continue carrying it, so it happened without the voice of Barry Bateman, and the story went through, obviously, our normal editorial processes, because it was still an important story to cover. And from that, I mean, we had a very brief conversation with Barry, but also internally it was basically to just say that we will be holding an internal probe into the matter. We are starting with a meeting that will happen today, and we are hoping that from there we'll follow the processes. And that part of that process is to allow for Barry to also put his side of the story, and then decisions will be taken from there in terms of whether the A a disciplinary inquiry or not. But obviously the internal process will go on starting from today.
When you decided to take him off air immediately, what was the logic internal to that decision? What were you trying to signify?
Look, we needed to protect the integrity and the credibility of that story. Obviously, you have somebody who has just used foul language. And maybe to clarify, Eusebius, the foul language used by Gary was after the press conference. It had ended. He was having, it's not easy to see in that video, but he was having a conversation with a reporter who had sat down during that press conference. But he was, of course, caught on camera using the language that he used that we don't promote as eyewitness news. And our first thoughts when we took him off air was that we needed to protect the credibility and the integrity of that story. It would, I think, have been improper for us to continue with Barry's voice on that story following what he was caught saying. The reality is that whether it was a private conversation or not, we all got to hear it. And it's always that difficult line about, you know, things that you say in private and then obviously when you're standing there as a representative of EWN, we expect you to uphold certain standards. So that was the first decision. We said, let's protect the integrity of the story. It was a necessary story that needed to be told, but let it not be with Barry's voice.
Absolutely. I wondered, as a, obviously not just as your colleague, but also someone who attaches a lot of credibility to EWN, whether Barry accepted as common cause that that's indeed what he uttered, given that the wording was not explicit. I assume, but tell me if I'm speaking incorrectly here in terms of my assumption, I assume that he accepts the facts are what you have just been implicitly saying they are in terms of what he had said.
Look, yes, as I said, the conversation was brief, and part of it being brief was just so that we allow processes to actually happen. I mean, I don't think any of us want to live in a country where decisions are taken on the hub.
Sure.
We still have to allow processes to happen, and this is why today's meeting and giving him an opportunity to write formally what his response is quite critical. But he does not dispute the way that we saw of that video and the words that he actually used. Obviously, there's things that happened that led to him saying that, but I think that is for him to actually speak and explain what was going through his mind at the time.
Third last question. I've had a number of women say to me one of the reasons why they were disappointed in him isn't because of how he behaved in relation to a politician, but that invariably, particularly in the context of gender-based violence discussions going on, it is interesting how the slur that was being used, the derogatory word, refers to women's genitalia. And in that sense, it was deeply misogynistic, quite apart from being a bad day at the office in terms of losing your cool.
Agreed, 100%. It's not, I mean, first of all, that's my thoughts exactly as a woman. And why is that particular word? And we know the history, the background, and what it says to me, to any woman who knows, who hears that word being said. And you know, and especially at the time that we are living in. But obviously, those conversations that we have every day, you see the
evidence
of, you know, our day-to-day language, we must be very careful what we are saying.
Yes.
And we can't excuse it. I mean, for me as EWN editor-in-chief, is that we should always hold ourselves on a higher moral ground. We can't even be comparing ourselves with, oh, when this incident happened, so-and-so didn't apologize. I mean, people were coming to me saying that Julius Malema berated a BBC journalist and UpToDate has never apologized. And that was during a press conference, and he was inside the house in his official capacity and was very much aware of the cameras. And I said to them, that is not the standards we hold ourselves on. We have to expect better of our reporters, and our code of conduct is actually quite clear in terms of how we present ourselves in the public. And unfortunately, in this day and age, separating that private and public will always be difficult because you are a representative of an organization, and people don't say, oh, you know, UCBS was now on his off time.
Mm-hmm. You've answered the second last question I had, but let me ask it explicit just for the sake of tying a bow around it. My second last question was going to be, what do you say if one plays devil's advocate to people that say, okay, but Julius deserves his comeuppance, journalists are also human, and when you have someone millimeters away from you with that kind of fiery political rhetoric, sure, the guy is a journalist, but he's also a citizen and a human being, and from time to time, it will be very difficult to only wear your hat as a journalist. We are not robots. What do you say to someone that may have sympathy for Barry in that regard?
Look, it's always a difficult one. But we always say to our reporters, hold yourself on a higher standard.
Mm.
We cannot allow for the situation to deteriorate. And in our interaction, it's that where you might be having a very difficult interview with CBS,
yes.
And you know at the back of your mind there are things that you would like to say, and you start remembering that you are on the radio. And
yeah.
And on this instance, Barry, the press conference had actually ended. Some reporters have said to me, you know, we have been in that situation where after the press conference, and I have said, oh, this was just a whole lot of twerk that the minister was saying and
yes.
all of that. But once it comes to the public eye, we have to deal with it. And I think that that is the conversation that we will have, and part of the process that we will have about when do we actually distinguish? Should we actually get somebody else who's outside of our space to come and give a view on this? But it has happened, and we have to deal with it and try and find answers to this very difficult question. You know, what do you do when people are sharing their own personal opinion in what they think is a private space, but obviously ends up in the public arena?
That's right. And then last but not least, Mashlate, has EWN suffered reputational damage?
Of course we have. I mean, as I say, we are, Barry Bateman is our senior reporter and one of the most known EWN reporters, and we can't just, people have not separated the person and the brand of EWN. And part of coming on to your show, you see here, is basically so that the listeners can hear us and we can ask us these very difficult questions. Some of the answers, maybe in a few days' time, I might have a better answer
for, sure.
For them. But rather actually be on air and actually try as much as possible to answer where we can and to actually assure the listeners that we are taking the matter seriously and we are going to be holding an internal probe. It will bring up what it brings up, but at least we have to be seen to be dealing with the matter, and that is what we're doing.
Mashlate, thank you for coming on and allowing me as your colleague to hold you accountable. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That was Mashlate Mashlase, who is, of course, the group editor-in-chief of EWN. 23 minutes after 9.
702. Open line.
Okay, over to you, 011-883-0702. Have your say right now. Teboho, good morning.
Morning, Eusebius. Eusebius, with your third and final question to Mashlate Mashlase, you stole my thunder.
You want my job?
because the reason why I called and what I said to the person who answered the phone was that if we look at Barry Bateman's use of the expletive from a psychological point of view, for me, it says to me the mere fact that currently, especially with the current debate on gender-based violence and all of that, you then come and use... For any word to have the desired thing and the offensive thing and the intended hurting that choice of word will have on the other, it means that you really have no regard for this particular part of the human anatomy, for females for that matter. So I wonder what it is that Barry Bateman sees in all the other women colleagues that he works with, including Mashlate. Doesn't he perhaps maybe as a first, when he looks at these women, that's what the first thing goes through his mind. He sees this particular private part of the women. It was disgusting, but completely uncalled for. It just says to me that he really has no regard for women. Because why could he not have chosen any other expletive, a male expletive or organ for that matter?
I hear you. It's an interesting take. Do you agree with Teboho, or do you think that he's overreaching in his criticism? 011-883-0702. And of course, let's expand the tapestry of conversations that we can have. We can talk about sport, other hard news issues, politics, the economy for that matter. Anything goes on the open line. I know that your immediate mind obviously is around what I have raised, but we don't need to stop there. We've got an entire 45 minutes of unscripted radio. 011-883-0702. Jeffrey, good morning. Okay, we'll come back in a second to Jeffrey. When you snooze, you lose out. Zane, good morning.
You being agreeing, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, good. Look, I think regardless of what the probe is going to be the result or what Barry's road is forward is going to be, the biggest thing that he's going to suffer because of it is his impartiality reputation. So the ability to be impartial as a journalist, I think there he's going to suffer some losses when it comes to reporting on certain people and certain groups and certain topics. I think he's going to lose that reputation of being impartial.
You know, it's interesting, and there are certain debates about the media that we don't have publicly that we should have so that you can understand some of the machinations of how things work, right? But also, as the public, you are entitled to be part of certain normative and other kinds of debate about journalism. There's a certain kind of leeway that I have as a analyst and as a talk show host that reporters appear not to have. I wonder whether that's a good or a bad thing. And I wonder whether that's shifting in light of social media turning even reporters into commentators. And what I mean by that is, will the world come to an end if you now know what Barry thinks of Julius Malema? The next time you hear the guy, whether it be on CNN, whether it be at EWN, whether it be at a different media house, are you honestly going to think differently about the content of his journalism compared to what you might have thought yesterday morning? So it's a genuine question.
Yeah, I don't.
And how do you treat that differently to say, I don't know, really, really respecting Eusebius McKaiser, who is explicit that he's got explicit biases ideologically or otherwise about particular politicians, political parties, and whatnot?
You make a great point, Eusebius. I think the content of his journalism going forward might not change, but I think the opinion of how he goes about things might change. But you make a great point, and that's something to discuss and open up a little bit further, because we only hear what gets made known to us through the media, and in this specific case with your second section of the show, through social media, I think there's a lot of stuff that we don't see and don't hear, but you make an excellent.
No, I hear you. And like I said, I don't have a definitive viewpoint. I think it's a wonderful discussion. These silos that we have, even within the media, are really kind of interesting. And maybe part of the problem is that as reporters, the world over, a lot of reporters make it hard for themselves to be honest about their privately held views about politics by peddling the lie of apparent neutrality and apparent objectivity. And then you, as the listener, the viewer, the reader, you are entitled to go, how? But you told me that you are dispassionate. Now I know, based on what you have said under your breath, that secretly you are not dispassionate after all. And I now know it. So that's maybe part of the problem, is that we then get busted not being consistent with the kind of norms that we pretend we are upholding, which is why I always say, the first and foremost rule, if you ever want to have longevity in journalism in general, regardless of where you are in the journalistic fraternity, is to be authentic, and never, ever try and game your readers, your listeners, your viewers. Tabby, so good morning.
Hi, Eusebius. It's Tabby from Victoria. Eusebius, I just want to point out that, listen, if you listen to Barry Bateman's reporting, for example, from Monday, just listen to his tone. His tone is very telling. You can tell from me as a listener, I can tell that this guy has a problem with the EFF itself. I mean, he's supposed to be like in the middle or rather impartial, but just listen to his recording, maybe in particular on Monday. That's what I wanted to comment on.
Okay, thanks, Tabiso. Much appreciated. Leshlohonolo, good morning.
Ntate, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good show. I just want to make a comment about the situation, Mr. Fred Mutsuri.
Yes, the educated Mr. Shlaudi Mutineng.
Well, my stance is not on him, but the evidence leader. Even Mr. Mutineng has held several positions at SEV, studying in 1992 as the person who was headhunted. For every other position that he got, was there any advertisements for those positions? Was not there any minimum requirements for them? Mm. That's where I want to end it.
Okay, we'll talk about cloudy a little bit later. It's not a cloudy day here in Joburg, but we can go there if you want to. 702.
Open line.
It is an open line. You tell me what you want to reflect on. What do you want to talk about on 011-883-0702. How was cloudy yesterday, hey? I had such FOMO because I had a really busy afternoon and I could see all over the place people just laughing and tweeting what Shlaudi Motsoeneng was saying and the Zondo Commission of Inquiry. If you are listening, what are some of the thoughts that came up for you? It is really, really incredible that someone this bizarre, weird, incoherent, dodgy should ever have been in charge of such an important state-owned entity as the public broadcaster. It really is mind-boggling, and it tells you something. His entire performance yesterday, I think, was a manifestation of the worst parts of the state capture years. And I laugh at some of these clips, and then I remember that it's not a laughing matter when we actually reflect on what the consequences are for subverting the democratic project if there isn't a free flow of information and a diversity of opinion and views that can flow through the public broadcaster, which is the first port of call for news, information, entertainment and debate for the vast majority of South Africans. So it's a critically important institution, and the links between the success of the SABC and our democracy cannot be underdescribed. That said, I don't know what to make of this character. He's like a caricature of himself, like telling us how edumacated he is.
I'm very educated. I'm the main man.
Tato, what do you want to say about the main man?
Hey, Mr. Isibi, you know, one thing about the main man. The main man was asked if he visited the Gupta house. He said he enjoyed curry there. Okay, that's fine.
No, it's not fine, because curry is awesome. Curry does not deserve to be associated with him. I wish he had chosen a food that is boring. You know, I was saying yesterday to my Facebook friends, I wish he had said we used to eat tofu, or we used to eat wheat-free pasta or gluten-free bread, things that I really don't care about. But I love a good curry. So I really don't like the fact that every time I'm going to have a curry now, it's going to be associated with cloudy.
But now this educated man, you see, he says one of the board members, he went to hand over one of the board members when he was asked if he took, who's this lady? Now I'm forgetting, stage fright. But he says it was part of, as a COO, it was part of a handover to the Guptas. He's handing over this board member to the Guptas. I don't know if anyone picked up on that.
Say that again. I mean, you're obviously watching it far more closely than me. What was that admission?
The admission was, I think Mr. Zondo asked him if he took this lady to meet the Guptas. He met him. The lady said he met the Guptas through him. And now Cloudy says, yes, I did take her there because I'm the COO. I was the COO of the SABC. And it was part of the handover. I don't know if over to the Guptas.
Presenting her to the queen type of thing.
Exactly.
Well, maybe that's why he was the main man.
Okay, you're serious. Thanks, man. Great show.
Thank you, Tata. Much appreciated. Gideon, good morning. Welcome to the open line.
Hi, good morning, Yubi. I see the circus was in town yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know, was it Boswell Wealthy or the Russian circus?
I don't know, eh? What did you make of it all? Did you enjoy the circus?
I did. All I can ask is, what yardstick does the SABC use in order to appoint COOs?
Well, he said that he was. I mean, he said that he was the best at the SABC. So, the yardstick is that obviously the SABC chooses whoever is the best.
Wow. I can tell you, in the SABC, no one was better than me, even if they advertise it.
Did you hear what he said there, Gideon? Have a listen. Hold on. Just listen.
I can tell you, in the SABC, no one was better than me, even if they advertise it.
So there you have it. The yardstick was the best. The main man was the best.
Wow. Have a nice day.
Lekker dag warm too for you too. Yeah. You know, it's one of those cases where you laugh, but you dare not laugh for too long as an engaged citizen, because the joke is actually on you and on me, because we got to ask ourselves, what are we not doing that enable clowns that are missing from traveling circuses to end up being chief operating officers in very important public entities? So we got to be careful what it is that we are laughing at, because sometimes the joke may be on you, the person who imagines yourself to simply be a bystander enjoying the circus. 20 minutes before 10 o'clock, give me a call on 011-883-0702. Let me know what is foremost on your mind this morning. What did you like to talk about? You can also tell me on Twitter. Use the hashtag 702 Open Line.
702 Open Line.
Toy, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebio. Thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to talk about, I think there's a part in this blame game that is being omitted. In 2011, the wife of the former Minister of Intelligence, Sherry Tuale, was sentenced to jail with her Nigerian accomplice. Now, she was accused of running an international drug link. Part of what the judge said in the sentencing and conviction is that she had sown seeds that would destroy families by getting them on drug this drug that made them addicted. Now, those seeds were sown way back in 2006, 2008, before she got arrested in 2010 and sentenced in 2011. Now, when a farmer plants, obviously you expect that there will be seeds and fruit out of it. So the seeds that people like Sherry Tuale sowed then, and recruiting other people, including Nigerians, to be her runners, When the government officials are not taking ownership that one of their own was actually at the head, those were the words of the judge way back in 2011. So to now say that Nigerians or other people run drug links and absolve people that were in high office, wife of a former intelligence minister, a senior government official who was responsible for health and community services, I think the narrative is not fair. The narrative is not clear to people. So when people start blaming others, then they should look inwards and say, so how come a government official responsible for health and community services was running a drug ring, recruiting immigrants? If immigrants came in, she had a duty to report to the police. She was the wife of the former intelligence minister. She could have nipped this in the bud if she told her husband, who was the intelligence person. So that narrative clearly, so she sought seats, according to what the judge said, back in 2007, 2008, and those seats are germinating and bearing fruits today. So to deal with the problem, we need to first go back and say, what kind of people fueled this or sowed those seats? And I don't believe that she acted alone. So where are the others? So that narrative I thought to bring in, that is almost like trying to cut down the fruit without looking at the root causes of these things. Because if we want sustainable solutions, we've got to go back and say, where did we start this journey from?
I think you make a good point. And let's see whether other people agree or disagree with you. 011-883-0702. My view, Toy, is very simple, that your place of origin is irrelevant to your criminality, and that what we need to do is to crack down on criminality, and secondly, ask ourselves why some people are susceptible to successfully being sold the drugs in turn by the drug peddlers as well. And whether you were born here, whether you were born in Lagos, in Joburg, in the Eastern Cape, for me, does not matter. If you're a criminal, then the criminal justice system should come hard down on you. And quite frankly, obsessing about the identity of that person from a place of origins point of view, I broadly agree with you, is a little bit of a red herring. Justice, good morning. Thank you for holding on.
Thanks, Yusuf. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
No, I'm just wanting to agree with you on the issue of the objectivity of journalists. That, you know, there's this thing of pretending to be neutral when, in fact, most are not. And I'm wondering, I've been battling with this issue, is there anything at all that can be done, more so when the prejudices, the personal prejudices of journalists affect their delivery of news? And a case in point here was when there was a view that Malusi Gigaba lied, you know, about the Oppenheimer, you know, that fireblade thing at the airport. So one morning, Bongani Dingwa played a clip where Malusi Gigaba was trying to explain, you know, his you know, position on the matter. But hardly halfway through the clip, Bongani said, "Oh God, I can't even listen to this." And then he stopped, he cut the clip. He said, "Just listen to that rubbish." Now, my issue was, me as a listener, I was very interested to hear the full clip. What is it that Malusi Gigaba was saying for himself in his defense, so that I can then make up my mind, better informed, having heard both sides of the story. But the personal prejudice of Bongani Dingwa prevented me, denied me that opportunity. And I'm just wondering, is there anything at all? I mean, I'm not for regulating journalists and stuff like that, but what do we do when your personal prejudices affect your delivery of news to me as a reader or as a listener or as a viewer?
Look, there's a couple of things to be said here, right? Firstly, we can play example table tennis the whole day, where you can come up with a particular example of a particular journalist that falls short of the best norms of fair, balanced, and excellent journalism. In the same way in which if you regarded someone as one of your faves, you may, in a casual conversation around the braai or the chisanyama, defend them against criticism by playing example table tennis on your side, lifting from hours and hours and hours and hours of years-long broadcasting examples of excellence and fairness and balance. So the question is, can we have the conversation at the level of patents and at the level of principle? I'd rather speak at that level. But no problem critiquing Bongani, and he can critique me, just as I ask hard questions of EWN. And similarly, I give full permission to my colleagues to critique my work. I think we have to recognize the power that we have as media in society the world over, as I was saying to my producer earlier. And if you accept how much power we have as media, then we ought to be subject to criticism and critique the same way we hold other sources of power to account. But here's the thing, to come back to your question directly, Justice. You know, it's interesting. What gives Eusebius credibility, if he has any credibility, as a talk show host? And presumably it's because for years he has demonstrated a certain kind of hopeful value that is attached to his name in terms of analysis, or in terms of being able to frame debates for the public, being able to challenge you to think critically about some of your settled beliefs and your belief system, whatever the case might be, right? That might be a generous way to interpret, why is Eusebius even on radio? Why is he hired by Prime Media? Now, once that is the case, you know that when you're tuning into a show like his, and Mongani's going to be no different, of course you're going to get slanted journalism, which is why the myth of objectivity needs to be blown out of the water. And it needs to start at journalism schools, with journalism professors stop lying to future journalists about the value of neutrality. It does not exist. So you're going to get a biased view. You're going to get Eusebius's view of the world. If you don't like it, tough luck, but that is what you are going to get. I think the mistake we make, Justice, is that we often pretend to be paragons of objectivity and neutrality, and then it's easy for us to have our bubbles burst by you, the listener, once we wake up on a particular day and we forget to keep up appearances.
So, you make a very good point. But now, I'm wondering if the conclusion then is, if I know that Eusebius is anti-EFF and I'm an EFF supporter, is Eusebius saying, well, you would be well advised not to listen to my show, listen to, you know, whatever else, because I am biased, I have taken a stand against the EFF. Is that the conclusion? or is there some middle ground in which journalists can try to prevent their personal prejudices to affect their delivery of news?
I mean, this is a fascinating conversation. I hope we're not boring everyone else, because your question is very technical about the media. Remember, the media's got different divisions, right? Let's take 702 and EWN. We're like two different departments, even though the way you experience your radio experience would be as a unified experience. In other words, if you hear the news coming up in 8 minutes' time, you might imagine that I speak to, say, Mashlatse on a daily basis. You'll be surprised to know that actually I don't. That would have been the first conversation her and I had in the last 12 months. So we've got very different roles. And I can speak most authoritatively, although I can give you opinions on other parts of the media, on, for example, the role of the talk show host and the broadcaster, and in print media of the columnist. Take The Guardian. You know you're going to get a certain kind of center-left view of Britain if you read The Guardian. Take my favorite columnist in the world currently, Gary Young. I know Gary Young's race politics. I know what kind of ideological slant I will get when I pick up his latest book or read his latest column. The conclusion is not I'm going to stop reading him because I know his biases. I read him because he's excellent, because he writes beautifully, because he challenges right-wing thought and right-wing praxis and right-wing politics. And there are right-wing commentators that I also enjoy reading because they challenge my worldview, and the fact that I know that they are biased doesn't end the question, is their journalism worth consuming?
Okay. No.
So if you listen to my show, I've said it before, you know that I'm a bit of a weirdo. I'm a liberal. I'm a race realist. I'm left-wing when it comes to critiquing capitalism. I believe that the state should have a heavy hand in terms of regulating markets, because markets are just as blind. I'm not colorblind myself. I'm also not convinced that there's only one kind of liberal. I'm not a DA liberal. I'm not a Helen Ziller liberal. I am what I would call a liberal egalitarian. We can talk about that on another day. But here's the bottom line. When you tune into the Eusebius McKayser show, you're not getting neutrality. You're getting that weird, openly gay, colored guy committed to liberalism with a brand of egalitarianism, that is the lens through which he's going to give you 3 hours of radio every single day. But here's the thing, Justice, you still tune in, don't you?
So why do you? Because of who you are. And
exactly.
Because you are complicated. You have one kind of problem. You're not very easy to read. I always say, every time when you go to elections, what is your CDS going to vote for? You know, one can certainly tell. But with Bongani, one can. But I'm just saying that, you know. But no, thank you.
No, thank you for a beautiful set of views. And like I said, I hope that everyone else finds this as interesting as you do and as I do. I think it's interesting for the public to sometimes hear us. And I was saying this to Mashlatse off air this morning. I think it's really interesting for the public to see and to hear us also thinking critically about our place in the world.